You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. I am joined by, of course, Trish McFarlane. Trish, how are you today?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I am well. I am I feel like $100, and I don't think I've said that in a while on the podcast.
You haven't. So. That's good. I was feeling like maybe you were feeling like $90, but nope, full $100. So that's good.
Just inching up. But great to be back on the show with you. And first, of course, let's thank our show sponsor, Virgin Pulse, sponsoring the HR Happy Hour Show since 1984. Learn more about them at www.virginpulse.com. Trish, a couple of just quick announcements. Winding down 2018 as we record this. It is maybe our last live show or last recorded show of the year, perhaps. I'm not sure, but the network's live and well. We're Only Human shows, HR Market Watch shows. I just got another one today from our pal George LaRocque that I need to post. So lots of fun stuff on the network. We are booking shows for Q1 and Q2 2019. If you have an idea, a topic, a guest, you want to get involved in the show, you can tweet at us at HR Happy Hour. Send us an email, Steve or Trish at h3hr.com. And the Alexa show, Trish, I did one the other day. It was really interesting. I hope you listened to it. The HR Happy Hour show is on Alexa. Add the show to your daily flash briefing. Just search for the HR Happy Hour skill on your Alexa device. Trish, did you hear my Alexa show, by the way? I'm going to put you on the spot. Did you listen?
I have not listened to that one, although I do always listen, whether it's you or Ben.
Or yourself.
obviously that. But no, I have not heard the latest. So I will definitely do that. Been a little bit tied up, but
it is a rollicking 3-minute ride, Trish. I encourage you to listen. It's all about the LinkedIn hiring trends report, which I'm fascinated by every year. So that's what it's about.
Good. I'm doing one soon about the recent HR Federation HCM trends report that I did with our friends George LaRocque and Ben Eubanks. So.
And speaking of that, our guest is waiting patiently, but I will mention, since you brought it up, Trish, that report, I did also feature that report in my most recent Human Resource Executive column, which hopefully you saw.
Thank you so much. No, you know what? That was a fun. I love working and collaborating with other analysts in the space. And, you know, obviously anyone who follows George LaRocque, and if you're not following him, please do. He has such great information that he collects throughout the year on the actual, you know, size of our HCM market, what the actual spend is, what the potential to spend is on technology. He really follows where all of the companies are going, especially the ones that are, you know, getting new investment. And then you sort of have, you know, Ben bringing in all of his recent focus around AI. He just launched a book recently on AI for human resources. So it was really fun to sort of partner with them, you know, and tie that into what I'm working on as well. So I hope people check that out. They can go to my blog if they want to get a copy for free.
Wait, you have a blog, Trish?
I do. They can go to hrringleader.com, and it's the very first thing, the HR Federation 2019 HCM Trends Report. So
awesome.
It's available for free, and they should check it out.
Cool. All right. I think that's all the promo. We need to get to it. We're talking, Trish, today, people and culture, and one of our favorite topics, but even more interestingly, from a great guest from one of our favorite companies. Let's just get on with this. Our guest today is Ago de Gasperis. I knew I'd stumble over the name. Ago de Gasperis. He's the vice president of people for Anheuser-Busch, Trish. That's big. Ago is responsible for aligning the people strategy to the business strategy for North America. In his current role, he provides leadership and strategic direction for all people functions, including culture, talent acquisition, diversity inclusion, leadership development, compensation, and industrial relations. I go join the organization in 2002 with Labatt in Toronto, another great brand. Prior to his current role, Ago was the Vice President of People and Partnerships for Labatt Breweries of Canada, where the company was recognized as one of Canada's top 100 employers for 5 consecutive years during his leadership. Ago, on the bio, and then we're going to welcome you, and this is fascinating. Ago is a chartered accountant and holds a Bachelor of Commerce degree from the University of Toronto. Ago, welcome to the HR Happy Hour show. How are you today?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks for having me. Trish, nice to be here.
It's great to have you, Trish Anheuser-Busch. You're a St. Louis person. Maybe just before we get into some of these people and culture topics with Ago, and that's pretty big for a St. Louis person to be talking to Anheuser-Busch on the HR Happy Hour show.
I know. Okay, so I can't lie. When we were pitched the idea, not only is it the ability to speak with Ago, which of course, like you said, local girl, this is absolutely a company I love. I've grown up with Anheuser-Busch. We, of course, in my whole family only drink Anheuser-Busch products. But they also work with Fleischmann Hillard. And I used to work in human resources at Fleischmann Hillard when I was a practitioner. So it was sort of like, for me, if all my moons and stars aligned, it was like, oh my gosh, of course we have to do this show. Will be a fun show. So yeah. Having such good representation with Fleischmann, which I adore, and then obviously Anheuser-Busch, which is product and location I adore. If anyone's not been to St. Louis, that's the one thing you see when you come. If you bring anybody here, I know when you came several years ago, it was like that was one of the first places I took you. You have to go on the tour and see our brewery. We're very proud of it.
Yeah. Absolutely worth the time. If you get to St. Louis, you've got to take the brewery tour. So Ago, maybe for everybody knows Anheuser-Busch, but maybe, we don't know everything, or maybe we think we know the company, right? Because it's such a familiar brand to most people, certainly in America, actually most people just about anywhere. Maybe tell us just a little bit about kind of the size and scope of kind of the North America operations, which you're the talent leader for, and then we can get into some of these, the deeper topics around culture.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, you touched on the heritage of Anheuser-Busch there in St. Louis. I mean, we've been in business and in St. Louis for over 165 years, right? So it's a great heritage. When you see the campus, if you have a chance to do the tour, there's a ton of historical moments that we've been, very proud to be a part of, right? So a rich heritage and history there. And then today, we continue that rich tradition. We're very proud of our St. Louis roots, but it's extending obviously beyond St. Louis, right? So we have 18,000 colleagues across the nation. You mentioned before we're responsible for North America, so we have 3,000-4,000 colleagues up in Canada as well. Right. But 18,000 here in the U.S. Across a number of sites, in multiple states. So we really are, or feel like we're part of the fabric, the American fabric and very connected to the communities we operate in, and have been for a long time. So that's something that, as part of the management team, not only am I proud of it, but I know all our colleagues, right across the line are very proud, of what they do and what they represent.
Ago,
so at a high level,
you mentioned the heritage. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. You mentioned the heritage, right, and the history, in which we're all familiar with a lot of it's iconic, right? And I got to believe there's a lot more to it than just, right, the icons and the familiarity and the brand names. And that doesn't just happen, right? That doesn't just kind of manifest just by accident. I'd love for you maybe to talk a little bit from your perspective as an HR leader about how you and the team there and really the company thinks about the culture there and how you think about it, maybe how you define it a little bit, and how you some of the things you're doing at Anheuser-Busch to kind of sustain this rich history and rich culture.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's a good way to kind of think about it or talk about it, because when we talk about culture, it is really important to us, and we know that a lot of companies talk about corporate culture and sure. what that means to them. So we're not unique in that respect. We have, if you were to visit our website or what have you, we have kind of our 10 principles, which in a very simple way, we try to boil down what we stand for, right? But if I may, you know, those 10 principles, you know, they start with our dream and what it is we're trying to achieve. Then, you know, that's a kind of our first one. The next two are really centered around our people, right? And it's all about having great people and having people at the center of what we do. And again, not obviously because I have a bias as the people person, but beyond that, all our leaders really, you know, they're measured by and take an active interest in developing people, you know, attracting, then developing, and really seeing people meet their full potential. And then the other principles are, you know, they're things that we use to try to codify, ground us on what it is that we want to do and how we want to operate. But, you know, they can be summed up in this idea of a culture of ownership, right? So, you know, we you know, I'm not judging, but we don't want this to just be a place where people clock in and out, right? We want it to be a place that people really feel part of, that really feel that they can contribute to, you know, and be part of something special. So coming in and acting like an owner, not just an employee, not just, you know, a number, but being someone who cares about what they're doing and the difference that they can make is really the culture that we try to embed. So we talk often about this idea of ownership, you know, through the ranks, right, through the entire organization, and anyone can display ownership. And that's what we really celebrate and try to raise up, right? So there's many different ways that we do that, you know, throughout the year and from one year to the next. But this idea of, you know, it's a company of owners. Owners will make the difference because they take results personally. They take things, you know, to heart. And that's really what it is that we're trying to do. And we think that culture of ownership that, you know, existed 165 years ago is really this, this, you know, what will sustain us for the next 165 years, you know?
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, just the very language that you use as you're describing that. From the people who I've known personally who have worked there in all different capacities, whether it's on the line or in, you know, in more of operations or administration or that sort of thing, I've always gotten that sense. I don't know that I really put much thought around it in the moment, but, you know, that makes perfect sense of how you're describing it. It's interesting because I think that's what a lot of companies struggle with and really never land on, is that you have a disconnect where your employees just feel like employees. They feel like they're dispensable. And one thing about having that sort of owner view is you feel like you matter, right? That you have a say-so. And it is, I don't know, I feel like that's just such a really unique approach that so many companies strive for and don't really get to. So I'm like sort of chomping at the bit to hear sort of some of the things that you're doing around that to make that even more possible for your current employees.
Well, and it's not just a theory, right? I mean, I think, you know, the idea sounds, you know, exciting, right? And it sounds very powerful. We do try to bring it to life, right? But it's not always well understood, even in our own company, to be completely honest with you. So it's something that as a leadership group, we talk about a lot because we want to instill that sense of ownership. We want to, you know, ensure people understand what ownership means or what we think it means. You know, and so there's elements of it that are empowerment. There's elements of it that are important to drive kind of, you know, day-to-day results, right? So it's really something that, you know, again, if it's embedded in everything you're doing, then you can see the results. So, I mean, some examples, right, for, you know, to try to make it more concrete, right? We have KPIs like any other company would, right? So what we try to measure a lot of things, right, all over the business, right? So whether it's in sales, on the supply chain, even in human resources or what we call people, in the people department, we measure just about everything, right? And so we hold ourselves to high standards in terms of, you know, owning those metrics, owning what those metrics actually mean. And trying to constantly improve. So there's this idea of continuous improvement that, again, is also embedded in the culture. Again, it's wrapped around this idea of ownership. So it's something that that kind of continues right on. But then we also ask people to innovate, right? Challenge the status quo, challenge what we're doing, right? not for the, just the sake of challenging, but also just to get us to a better place, right? So if we see things out there that are better than what we're doing, we need to be humble enough to understand that there could be a better way. There could be, you know, ideas that we can internalize and make our own, you know, and we can break through by having people, you know, challenge kind of what we're doing. So one example maybe that's more relevant, let's say in the people space, is around kind of how we, you know, how we treat our employee base, right? And this whole conversation around inclusion, right? Or diversity and inclusion. So it's a conversation we've been having over the last, you know, few years in a more serious, you know, tone. And we really turn to our employees as owners to kind of help us craft, you know, what is it about this that we need to do, right? And what do we need to kind of do in this space to really make this a more inclusive environment, right? So, you know, and so together with our team members and our colleagues, you know, we were able to start shaping how this agenda would, you know, unfold here, right? And so our employees themselves, our owners, right, decided that we would relaunch some of our employee resource groups, right? Some were rebranded, some, you know, in some form or another and relaunched. And then they also decided that wouldn't it be great to have kind of an umbrella group where the different community groups could actually come together. So rather than be disparate or you know, siloed, how do we bring the groups together? Because at the intersections of the groups, there's a lot of commonality, right? So then they created what they called Panorama, which was, you know, the umbrella that all the employee resource groups would go on. So of course the people team was involved, you know, in helping set these things up and shape them, but it was really employee led, right? And it's that culture of ownership where something is important to you and you want to make a difference, you know, and then you feel empowered to do that, that allowed that to happen.
Algo, that's a really great example. Let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Oz. I'm with Trish McFarland. Of course, our guest is Algo DiGasperis. I said your name better that time, Algo. By the end of the show, I think I'll have it down. The couple things, Algo, in your comments, I was writing some notes down as you were talking because it's really interesting. One thing was, I just want to drift back a second to, you talked about measurement and KPIs. And one of the really interesting things that comes up a lot with organizations, who, especially they get into the metrics, right, and in the HR space or just in other parts of the business, we're gonna measure everything, we're gonna hold people accountable to metrics, but it doesn't work if those people aren't empowered or enabled to influence, right, those outcomes, right? So you can't measure people and hold them to certain KPIs and don't give them the tools or the support they need or the ability to influence those outcomes. And it sounds like you guys have thought about that very, very intentionally, right? And are allowing people to really have influence over the things that they'll ultimately be accountable for, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, so we have this very robust kind of structured way where we, you know, we cascade what we call targets, or, you know, some companies would call them objectives or personal goals or what have you, on an annual basis, right? And that process is a bit top down and bottom up, right? So it's an iterative process where a manager will say, you know, based on our strategic vision or direction, these should be the objectives that we're trying to achieve as a company, and then as a team, and then as individuals, and it all kind of ladders up. But what we try to do is also give, you know, our colleagues the chance to say, okay, well, this is how I would also want to engage to achieve those objectives. And these, what I think, you know, are some of the targets that I might, or the objectives that I might chase to kind of achieve that end, right? And again, as long as it ladders up and there's that, you know, like I said, there's that iteration between top down, bottom up, you know, when those two things come together, it can be very powerful, right? Because then the person feels like they've set at least, you know, one or two of their own objectives. They're usually areas that they're passionate about, right? And that they feel that they can control or at least have a great influence on. So, you know, so that's kind of how we ritualize it, let's say, and make a routine out of it. And it's embedded kind of, like I said, in our annual process. But then even throughout, like, look, someone has a good idea, you know, we're very pragmatic, right? So, you know, you bring the idea with facts, right? With the right kind of insight, And you know, I was just talking to one of our brewery GMs yesterday, actually, and he was like, you know, it's rare that an idea comes forward and we shoot it down if it's a great idea, right?
Right.
And he's saying, I keep telling, you know, our young talent and people that maybe have joined the organization from the outside, that's really the way we work, right? And you know, if it's a great idea and it's backed by facts, not just feeling, right? Some intuition is good, but having the facts behind it, more likely than not, someone will say, well, go ahead and make it happen, right? You find a way to kind of implement that or what have you. And again, we have ways of celebrating, the people that do that in the organization, and showing them as a sign for others to follow too in the future, which is nice. And the other thing I always say to people is if your idea is something you're passionate about, you know, sometimes the answer may be no, right? Because of competing priorities or limited resources or whatever. But there's nothing to say that you can't bring it back, another day, right? You know, you live to fight another day and you bring back your idea with maybe even more facts or better information and you make it happen. And that resolve, you know, again, we talked about a company of owners and the people that really want to make a difference, right? They won't give up, right? Because if they feel passionate about the topic, passionate about what the result could be, they'll fight for it, right? And that's what we like, right? So even if the first answer is no, or if the answer is we can't do it this year because of other priorities, you know, bring it back in the following year or the year after that, and let's make it happen. And there's good examples of when that's happened, in my career and then in countless others, right? And then it becomes a self-fulfilling thing or a repetitive thing where, you know, you feel it once, right? Where maybe somebody said no, or somebody said something was impossible, and then you prove them wrong, right? Or the naysayers, you prove them wrong. If we use the market analogy, the bears versus the bulls, right? So you prove the bears wrong, and then it's almost intoxicating in a way where then you want to do it again, right? And you say, well, what else did somebody say we couldn't do, right? And what other things can we kind of break down? And then that feeling and that continuous cycle is really amazing, right? And super powerful when people have the opportunity to be part of that.
Yeah, and I think you didn't really mention this, but I'll mention it. Like, just the important first step in all this, in this kind of innovation process, is just listening to people, right? And even if you, as you said, sometimes you can't implement every idea, right? Maybe the timing's wrong, or maybe it's not feasible, or resources, et cetera, but if people feel like they've genuinely been listened to, they genuinely have the opportunity to influence the organization, work process, a product, a workplace rule, whatever it is, right? As long as they've been genuinely heard, right, and they feel like they've been their opinions and their ideas have been considered, even if they can't always be implemented, that's an important first step that even many organizations don't even get to, right? They won't even listen in the first place, or they're so dismissive, right, of those things right off the get-go, and that can really demoralize folks, right? And as you said, that you're trying to create that culture of ownership, and owners get listened to even if they can't always have their ideas actioned on. So I think that's a really important note as well.
Yeah, and I think you know, going back to our principles, we talk a lot about the informality and the candor that we try to live and breathe as a company, right? So when you see us, you first, by our dress, right? Because it's very informal. But then even, when you think about our structure, the way we're structured as an organization, it's less hierarchical than some, traditional businesses, I would say. And we believe that that's important, because when you're, when we're flatter, when we're closer to the field, we're closer to where the action is, we can be closer to our people, right? We can hear firsthand, what's happening, how they're feeling, what's happening in the market, what's happening on the shop floor. And then try to help them do something about it, right? So absolutely, I agree with that, and it's something that we actually embed when we talk about our principles and the culture that we try to espouse, and how we want our leaders to lead. So, but it takes an incredible amount of effort and dedication. So it's not for everyone, right? Because not everyone is willing to put that time in. Not everyone is willing to kind of behave in that way, right? So But it's a balance, right? Like I said, too, it's top down, bottom up. So it's a, it's an interesting balance, too, that we try to strike as well. So
it's really interesting. It's easier, right, to sort of have some leader such as yourself or other leaders, right, just set direction, enforce rules, right, monitor efficiency and kick out the bad actors, right, who aren't following along. And I suppose that's easier, but ultimately certainly less fulfilling and hopefully, right, for folks who like to think differently, less successful in the long run. Like you can't innovate in a culture like that if you're really just trying to keep everybody in line, I guess.
Yeah, so we try to do both, right? So there's a place for structure and process, and it's important to have policies and procedures, right? So you need to have that at a certain level. But then again, right, this idea of having people that act as owners and make things happen and really push through, to allow that to happen, you gotta create the environment where they feel that they can do that, right? So we spend a lot of time trying to create that environment, right? So set the guardrails, right? Give people kind of, the basics in terms of what the do's and don'ts are, and then, and then push forward, right? But we do like process. I don't want you to get the wrong idea because, wait a minute, he's not describing what we do. But there is a lot of process and there is a lot of structure as well.
But the
mindset around, around thinking bigger and trying to do things that are special, right? And really, 10X or what have you, right, is embedded in the culture.
You don't ship millions of gallons of product out without some process, right? That doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it just seems like where to focus the process portion of things, and that really sort of the innovation side of things is what's really fueled by the culture aspect. So it's nice to see that balance. Have you had times in your career where you've maybe had positions where it wasn't quite that balanced? I mean, like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, if I'm someone who's maybe, say, in an overly process-focused organization right now, and I'm really, I'm the HR leader, and I'm going to try and help my C-suite, see the light of treating people more in this, this way where they're really part of it. Any tips or insights on kind of how they can help move the needle with their organization?
I think if you try to simplify the process as much as possible, right? So we talk about simplicity and common sense, right? Trying to reign supreme, right? So if you need process, like we all, we all talked about, so it's important, right? Because you can't run a business to scale without process, right? So you need it. There's a place for it, and quite frankly, it prevents, problems, right? I mean, if you don't have strong processes, you can put people's safety at risk, right? So, and that's something that we would never want to do, right? As an example, you can put product quality at risk if you don't have strong, robust processes. So I think, it's very important, but if you have as an underlying principle, simplicity and common sense, then you would say, how do you make sure the processes don't become, something in to themselves, right? And they're a means to an end, right? So keeping them simple, trying to make sure they're running as efficiently as possible. And then they work in the background, right? They become table stakes that you don't really talk about as much because you almost take them for granted, right? And then you spend more of your time and you have more, share of mind moves to those things that will move the needle, right? Whether it's innovation and in a process, whether it's innovation from a product standpoint, innovation in kind of, how we go to market, whatever, right? So, so by having the processes in place, very strong, very streamlined, having some people thinking only about the process and how to continue to make it even simpler and work more efficiently. And then that, like I said, becomes the baseline or table stakes, and then you focus on these other things that, quite frankly, everybody likes the more innovative, strategic things anyway, right? So it's more engaging. But if the fundamentals aren't working, if the process is broken, then it's very hard to do the other stuff, right? So I would say, make sure your processes exist, they're strong, they're simple, You have some people fully dedicated to making sure that they're you know, that's the reason for being, right? And then if they are working, they almost become kind of out of sight, out of mind, and then you can focus on step changes and game changing, you know, initiatives, right? But it's hard because sometimes processes, they break, you know, sometimes new technologies come out and they disrupt the process. So then you have to, you know, rethink. You may end up with turnover, and then maybe your process wasn't as streamlined as you thought, and it ended up being a little bit more people dependent. So then, you know, it breaks down. So then you got to go in and you know, and fix it. So process, you know, ends up coming back, you know, from time to time. But I think, again, try to keep it simple, try to use good common sense. The process becomes an enabler and not just something, you know, that people forget why it was ever, you know, instituted in the first place, right?
Igo, we just have a couple more minutes left with you, but I do want to ask you one last thing. When prepping for the show, and I was like looking around the website, and there's a lot of really cool stuff there. One of the things that struck me was, like, any talent leader such as yourself, leading talent for a huge organization, 18,000 plus employees, locations all over the country, all over North America, you've got to be thinking about finding and sort of nurturing and helping to develop that next generation, right, of people into the organization and the next generation of leaders. There's some really interesting insights and really great blogs, quite frankly, from these trainees in various programs. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how you think about sort of keeping the talent pipeline full and getting that sort of the next generation of leaders, the Anheuser-Busch kind of coming up through the ranks. It's really fascinating stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, this culture of ownership, right? I mean, the easiest way to embed it is when you start early in someone's career, right? And then if they're allowed the chance to grow up in the organization, right? So we spend a lot of time recruiting on campus. We have a multitude of you know, programs, trainee programs that are essentially accelerated, you know, management programs for folks. The centerpiece of that is our Global Management Trainee Program, which has been in existence, you know, globally for over 25 years. In here in the U.S., in one shape or form for at least, you know, a decade or so. We've had other trainee programs for many, many more years than that. But the Global Management Trainee is kind of the centerpiece, where we go, you know, to top schools and recruit kind of the top talent that, you know, we think could be our future leaders, right? And when they get here, it's a very robust, you know, training, program where, it's a very intense rotational program where they get exposure to different parts of the business, very senior leadership, you know, and are given the it's a huge investment on the company side. And they're given every chance to kind of start their career out on the right foot, right? And then their first position is in the business. We prefer to have them, you know, on the front line. So whether it's in supply or in sales, and then, you know, and then they... you know, they're off to the races, right?
Right.
And we keep a close eye on them and watch their development over time. Then what's evolved over the years as well is other trainee programs. So we have one for our brewery network, for our supply organization, where folks will come in and they'll start. Again, it's a shorter rotational program or what have you, but something that is very intense and kind of streamlined so that they get a lot of training up front. And then their frontline managers right out of the gate, right? And, you know, ton of exposure to senior leadership, a lot of coaching and development. We have a similar program for supply chain, like logistics, procurement. We have another one for our sales or marketing folks, our commercial side of the business. And more recently, we even started one in you know, in the people area for for our team and human resources, which has been kind of interesting because we've always gone on campus and hired, you know, you know, really bright folks, but we decided to kind of, you know, brand it as a program, right? So now they come in and they have an orientation or a training for the first 5 or 6 months, where we invest heavily in getting them up to speed, and then we deploy them, right? And then they're, you know, right out of school, they're out in the field and practicing their trade, right? An interesting thing is we want people that have you know, a classical, let's say, HR background. Maybe they studied industrial relations, organizational behavior, maybe psychology, something like that. But we also have some engineers that are in the program, and maybe some business students as well, or some liberal arts students as well. And then the cohort, it's a very small class, you know, so it's exclusive, but we go for quality, not quantity. But then the cohort kind of complements each other as well. And then the richness of kind of that diversity and background, something that we think, you know, can be very powerful down the road, right? And then they're able to interact with each other. They have kind of an implied kind of support network. We buddy them up. We pair them up. You know, and like I said, the investment's pretty heavy, right? So these programs, you know, are important, but it doesn't stop when we just hire them and bring them in, because, you know, given the investment, given kind of our vision of what they can be, you know, we keep track of them throughout their career, right? And you know, and try to make sure they're progressing at the pace of their talent and really fulfilling their full potential, right, that we saw in them, you know, upon first meeting. So it's really a centerpiece for us. You know, there's countless examples of folks that have joined the company in one of these ways and in these tracks, and, you know, and they're very, you know, they're part of our executive board or other senior positions. So, you know, and now we just have to see how these programs will evolve, right, over time as well. But they truly are a centerpiece. We invest heavily. We believe in them. And we believe in their ability to unlock, you know, people's full potential.
Yeah, that's great to see, Iago. And I was like, I had to mention it. I know we're running a little short on time, but I had to mention it because I was reading one of the blogs from one of the people trainees. And I think she said, you know, she was an engineer somewhere and she got through the training and was just thrown out into one of the breweries. And she was like a little overwhelmed at first, but then, like, you know, after a couple of weeks or a month, it's like really into it, just really, really thriving. And the thing that was so notable about it was just the excitement and the enthusiasm. Like, you know, it comes right through, right, what these folks are sharing. And it's publicly sharing. It's right on the website. So we'll put some links in the show notes to some of that stuff because I found it really interesting and kind of fun to read too as well. So,
it's a big part.
Really, really fun.
I was just going to say, I know you want to close, but it's a big part of our culture, right? Allowing people to learn by doing, right? Sometimes it's uncomfortable, right? But we talk about, you know, we like when people can, you know, be comfortable with being uncomfortable. We talk about taking folks out of their comfort zone, right? And really stretching themselves. And like I said, to realize their full potential. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. There are the moments where it doesn't work. But, you know, I'd say, you know, 8-9 times out of 10, it does, right? And the power of the human spirit, the power of people, you know, their ability to achieve, right? If we pick the right folks, right? It's always amazing, right? And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me what people with the right coaching, the right training, you know, but then the right opportunities to grow and stretch themselves, what they can do and what they can achieve. So that's a hallmark of our culture, right? Letting people really, you know, just do their thing, right? And like I said, 9 times out of 10, it works, and it's phenomenal, right?
It's just a great story, Trish, right? That legendary company, 150-year-old company, but still investing in culture, creating that culture of ownership, being intentional about innovation, intentional about how the next generation of leaders are going to develop. I think we'll be drinking, Trish, I plan on be drinking Bud Lights for another, well, maybe not myself for another 150 years, but someone will be drinking Bud Lights 150 years from now. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
No, that's kind of dilly dilly.
Yeah.
That's right. No, I think it's exciting.
I couldn't resist, Steve. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I couldn't resist.
You're fine.
It's exciting to see a company that has been around that amount of time, though, that still has some really super innovative approaches to the way that people are, you know, brought into the organization, the way that they're nurtured, and that the way that they continue on. And, you know, definitely, I think a lot when you think back through the years of a lot of the challenges from an HR perspective that we've had, it's where, you know, everyone is either, you know, truly just sort of raised in HR and they, right, you hear they don't have an understanding of the business and, or they're, you know, business people who don't have an understanding of HR. I mean, it sounds like what you're doing at AB is really that nice blend. And then it gives those individuals those relationships too throughout their career, that a lot of times when you join an organization, you might be sort of an island. You don't really have that perspective. So I think that too, that's pretty unique. And I love that it's very public on your website so that, you know, the listeners can go and check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Ago de Gasperis, this has been a thrill and a pleasure for us. I'm fanboying out a little bit, of course, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And the next time, and Trish, I think you're with me on this, the next time we do the show, I think we all agree we'll meet at the brewery.
That's
and then,
right.
You know, we'll do the show, you know, at say 5 o'clock, and, you know, and do it properly. That's what I'm suggesting.
That would be our pleasure. It'd be our pleasure. Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure, and then it'd be our pleasure to host you at the brewery for sure.
All right.
Thanks again.
Well, we're going to make that happen. Ago de Gasperis, Vice President of People, Anheuser-Busch. It may be five. If it's 5 o'clock where you are, where you're listening to this show, please have a Bud Light on me. There you go. So, or your favorite. There's 100 brands, Trish. I'm talking about Bud Light. That's my house brand. There's 100 brands.
There are so many. It's really fascinating. And I would say, too, if you go to any of the locations, of the many locations where they do sort of show you all of the different brands in person, and, you know, and at least here in St. Louis, if you come, another great reason to come for your vacation in St. Louis is you can actually go and try many, many, many of the different offerings that they have. And so that's always fun, too. So.
Awesome. Yeah. So this has been great. So again, thanks so much to Ago and everybody at Anheuser-Busch for making this possible. Trish, thank you. Hope you have a great, if I don't speak to you, coming up on the holiday. So merry, merry and all of this. Anything else we want to mention? I think we're winding down the year. So events and stuff will kick off next quarter. We'll start talking about that. But thanks again to Virgin Pulse, of course, for being with us this year, www.virginpulse.com. And please do subscribe to the HR Happy Hour Show. Tell a friend wherever you get your podcasts. It's been a great year on the HR Happy Hour Show. It's going to be a great 2019, too. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. We will see you next time. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.